back to his room. He couldn't buy a gun from a dealer because he had no identification, but he could buy one out of the paper, and he did. A Tech 9 with two extra magazines and a box and a half of shells. The man delivered the gun to his door, and he paid him in cash. He turned the piece in his hand. It had a greenish, parkerized finish, semi-automatic.
"When was the last time you fired it?" he said.
"I ain't never fired it."
"Are you sure it fires?"
"Why would it not?"
"I don't know."
"Well, I don't either."
After he left, Moss walked out onto the prairie behind the motel with one of the motel pillows under his arm, and he wrapped the pillow about the muzzle of the gun and fired off three rounds, and then stood there in the cold sunlight, watching the feathers drift across the gray chaparral, thinking about his life, what was past, and what was to come. Then he turned and walked slowly back to the motel, leaving the burnt pillow on the ground. He rested in the lobby and then climbed up to the room again. He bathed in the tub and looked at the exit hole in his lower back in the bathroom mirror. It looked pretty ugly. There were drains in both holes that he wanted to pull out, but he didn't. He pulled loose the plaster on his arm and looked at the deep furrow the bullet had cut there, and then taped the dressing back again. He dressed and put some more of the bills into the back pocket of his jeans, and he fitted the pistol and the magazines and the shells into the case and closed it and called a cab and picked up the document case and went out and down the stairs. He bought a 1978 Ford pickup with four-wheel drive and a 460 engine from a lot on North Broadway and paid the man in cash and got the title notarized in the office and put the title in the glove box and drove away. He drove back to the motel and checked out and left, the Tech 9 under the seat and the document case and his bag of clothes sitting in the floor on the passenger side of the truck. At the on-ramp at Burney, there was a girl hitchhiking, and Moss pulled over and blew the horn and watched her in the rearview mirror, running, her blue nylon knapsack slung over one shoulder. She climbed in the truck and looked at him. 15, 16, red hair.
"How far are you going?" she said.
"Can you drive?"
"Yeah, I can drive. It ain't no stick shift, is it?"
"No. Get out and come around."
She left her knapsack on the seat and got out of the truck and crossed in front of it. Moss pushed the knapsack into the floor and eased himself across, and she got in and put the truck in drive, and they pulled out onto the interstate.
"How old are you?"
18.
"Bullshit. What are you doing out here? Don't you know it's dangerous to hitchhike?"
"Yeah, I know it."
He took off his hat and put it on the seat beside him and leaned back and closed his eyes.
"Don't go over the speed limit," he said. "You get us stopped by the cops and you and me both will be in a shit pot full of trouble."
"All right."
"I'm serious. You go over the speed limit and I'll set your ass out by the side of the road."
"All right."
He tried to sleep, but he couldn't. He was in a lot of pain. After a while, he sat up and got his hat off the seat and put it on and looked over at the speedometer.
"Can I ask you something?" she said.
"You can ask."
"Are you running from the law?"
Moss eased himself in the seat and looked at her and looked out at the highway.
"What makes you ask that?"
"On account of what you said back yonder about being stopped by the police."
"What if I was?"
"Then I think I ought to just get out up here."
"You don't think that. You just want to know where you stand."
She looked at him out of the corner of her eye. Moss studied the passing country.
"If you spent 3 days with me," he said, "I could have you holding up gas stations. Be no trick at all."
She gave him a funny little half smile.
"Is that what you do?" she said. "Hold up gas stations?"
"No, I don't have to. Are you hungry?"
"I'm all right."
"When'd you last eat?"
"I don't like for people to start asking me when I eat last."
"All right. When did you eat last?"
"I knowed you was a smartass from the time I got in the truck."
"Yeah? Pull off up here at this next exit. Supposed to be 4 miles. and reach me that machine gun from under the seat.
Bell drove slowly across the cattle guard and got out and closed the gate and got back in the truck and drove across the pasture and parked at the well and got out and walked over to the tank. He put his hand in the water and raised a palmful, then let it spill again. He took off his hat and passed his wet hand through his hair and looked up at the windmill. He looked out at the slow, dark elliptic of the blades turning in the dry and wind-bent grass. A low wooden trundling under his feet. Then he just stood there, paying the brim of his hat slowly through his fingers. The posture of a man, perhaps, who has just buried something.
"I don't know a damn thing," he said.
When he got home, she had supper waiting. He dropped the keys to the pickup in the kitchen drawer and went to the sink to wash his hands. His wife laid a piece of paper on the counter, and he stood looking at it.
"Did she say where she was? This is a West Texas number."
"She just said it was Carla Jean and give the number."
He went to the sideboard and called. She and her grandmother were in a motel outside of El Paso.
"I need for you to tell me something," she said.
"All right."
"Is your word good?"
"Yes, it is."
"Even to me?"
"I'd say especially to you."
He could hear her breathing in the receiver, traffic in the distance.
"Sheriff?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"If I tell you where he called from, do you give your word that no harm will come to him?"
"I can give my word that no harm will come to him from me. I can do that."
After a while, she said,
"Okay."
The man sitting at the little plywood table that folded up from the wall onto a hinged leg finished writing on the pad of paper and took off the headset and laid it on the table in front of him and passed both hands backwards over the sides of his black hair. He turned and looked toward the rear of the trailer where the second man was stretched out on the bed.
"Listo,"
he said. The man sat up and swung his legs to the floor. He sat there for a minute, and then he rose and came forward.
"You got it?"
"I got it."
He tore the sheet off the pad and handed it to him, and he read it and folded it and put it into his shirt pocket. Then he reached up and opened one of the kitchen cabinets and took out a camouflage-finished submachine gun and a pair of spare clips and pushed open the door and stepped down into the lot and shut the door behind him. He crossed the gravel to where a black Plymouth Barracuda was parked, and opened the door and pitched the machine gun in on the far seat and lowered himself in and shut the door and started the engine. He blipped the throttle a couple of times and then pulled out onto the blacktop and turned on the lights and shifted into second gear and went up the road with the car squatting on the big rear tires and fishtailing and the tires whining and unspooling clouds of rubber smoke behind him. Part 8.
"I've lost a lot of friends over these last few years, not all of them older than me, neither. One of the things you realize about getting older is that not everybody is going to get older with you. You try to help the people that are paying your salary, and of course you can't help but think about the kind of record you leave. This county has not had an unsolved homicide in 41 years. Now we got 9 of them in 1 week. Will they be solved? I don't know. Every day is against you. Time is not on your side. I don't know as it'd be any compliment if you was known for second-guessing a bunch of dope dealers. Not that they have all that much trouble second-guessing us. They don't have no respect for the law. That ain't half of it. They don't even think about the law. It don't seem to even concern them. Of course, here a while back, they shot and killed a federal judge. I guess he concerned them. Add to that there's peace officers along this border getting rich off of narcotics. Now, that's a painful thing to know, or it is for me. I don't believe that was true even 10 years ago. A crooked peace officer is just a damned abomination. That's all you can say about it. He's 10 times worse than the criminal. and this ain't going away. And that's about the only thing I do know. It ain't going away. Where would it go to? And this may sound ignorant, but I think for me the worst of it is knowing that probably the only reason I'm even still alive is that they have no respect for me. And that's very painful. Very painful. It has done got way beyond anything you might have thought about even a few years ago. Here a while back they found a DC-4 over in Presidio County, just setting out in the desert. They'd come in there of a night and graded out a sort of landing strip and set out rows of tar barrels for lights, but there was no way you could have flown that thing back out of there. It was stripped out to the walls, just had a pilot seat in it. You could smell the marijuana, you didn't need no dog. Well, the sheriff over there, and I won't say his name, he wanted to get set up and nail them when they come back for the plane. And finally, somebody told him that they wasn't nobody coming back, never had been. When he finally understood what it was they was telling him, he just got real quiet. And then he turned around and got in his car and left. When they was having them dope wars down across the border, you could not buy a half-quart mason jar nowheres to put up your preserves and such, your chow-chow. There wasn't none to be had. What it was, they was using them jars to put hand grenades in. If you flew over somebody's house or compound and you dropped grenades on them, they'd go off before they hit the ground. So what they'd done was, they'd pull the pin and stick them down in the jar and screw the lid back on. Then, whenever they hit the ground, the glass'd break and release the spoon, the lever. They would preload cases of them things. Hard to believe that a man would ride around at night in a small plane with a cargo such as that, but they done it. I think if you were Satan, and you were sitting around trying to think up something that would just bring the human race to its knees, what you'd probably come up with is narcotics. Maybe he did. I told that to somebody at breakfast the other morning, and they asked me if I believed in Satan. I said, well, that ain't the point, and they said, I know, but do you? I had to think about that. I guess as a boy I did. Come the middle years, my belief, I reckon, had waned somewhat. Now, I'm starting to lean back the other way. He explains a lot of things that otherwise don't have no explanation. Or not to me, they don't.
Ma set the case in the booth and eased himself in after it. He lifted the menu from the wire rack where it stood along with the mustard and ketchup. She scooted into the booth opposite. He didn't look up.
"What are you having?" he said.
"I don't know. I ain't looked at the menu."
He spun the menu around and slid it in front of her and turned and looked for the waitress.
"What are you?" the girl said.
"What am I having?"
"No. What are you? Are you a character?"
He studied her.
"The only people I know that know what a character is," he said, "is other characters."
"I might just be a fellow traveler."
"Fellow traveler?"
"Yeah."
"Well, you are now."
"You're hurt, ain't you?"
"What makes you say that?"
"You can't hardly walk."
"Maybe it's just an old war injury."
"I don't think so. What happened to you?"
"You mean lately?"
"Yeah, lately."
"You don't need to know."
"Why not?"
"I don't want you getting all excited on me."
"What makes you think I'd get excited?"
"'Cause bad girls like bad boys. What are you going to have?"
"I don't know. What is it you do?"
"3 weeks ago, I was a law-abiding citizen, working a 9-to-5 job, 8-to-4 anyways. Things happen to you, they happen. They don't ask first. They don't require your permission."
"That's the truth if ever I heard it told," she said.
"You hang around me, you'll hear some more of it."
"You think I'm a bad girl?"
"I think you'd like to be."
What's in that briefcase?
Briefs.
What's in it?
I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
You ain't supposed to carry a gun in a public place. Did you not know that? In particular, a gun such as that.
Let me ask you something.
Go ahead.
When the shooting starts, would you rather be armed or be legal?
No, I don't want to be around no shooting.
Yes, you do. It's rode all over you. You just don't want to get shot. What are you having?
What are you?
Cheeseburger and chocolate milk. The waitress came and they ordered. She got the hot beef sandwich with mashed potatoes and gravy.
You ain't even asked me where I was going, she said.
I know where you're going.
Where am I going, then?
Down the road.
That ain't no answer.
It's more than just an answer.
You don't know everything.
No, I don't.
You ever kill anybody?
Yeah, he said. You? She looked embarrassed.
You know I ain't never killed nobody.
I don't know that.
Well, I ain't.
You ain't, then.
You ain't done either. Are you?
Done what?
What I just said.
Killing people? She looked around to see if they might be overheard.
Yes,
she said. Be hard to say.
After a while, the waitress brought their plates. He bit the corner off a packet of mayonnaise and squeezed out the contents over his cheeseburger and reached for the ketchup.
Where are you from? He said.
She took a drink of her iced tea and wiped her mouth with a paper napkin.
Port Arthur, she said.
He nodded.
He took up the cheeseburger in both hands and bit into it and sat back, chewing.
I ain't never been to Port Arthur, he said.
I ain't never seen you there.
How could you have seen me there if I ain't never been there?
I couldn't. I was just saying I ain't. I was agreeing with you.
Moss shook his head. They ate.
I reckon you're on your way to California.
How did you know that?
That's the direction you're headed in.
Well, that's where I'm going.
You got any money?
What's it to you?
It ain't nothing to me, do you?
I got some.
He finished the cheeseburger and wiped his hands on the paper napkin and drank the rest of the milk. Then he reached in his pocket and took out the roll of hundreds and unfolded them. He counted out $1,000 onto the formica and pushed it toward her and put the roll back in his pocket.
Let's go, he said.
What's that for?
To go to California on.
What do I got to do for it?
You don't have to do nothing. Even a blind sow finds an acorn every once in a while. Put that up and let's go.
They paid and walked out to the truck.
You wasn't calling me a sow back yonder, was you?
Moss ignored her. Give me the keys, he said. She took the keys from her pocket and handed them over.
I thought maybe you forgot I had them, she said.
I don't forget much.
I could have just slipped off like I was going to the ladies' room and took your truck and left you sitting there.
No, you couldn't have.
Why not?
Get in the truck.
They got in and he set the case between them and pulled the Tech 9 out of his belt and slid it under the seat.
Why not? She said.
Don't be ignorant all your life. In the first place, I could see all the way to the front door and out the parking lot clear to the truck. In the second place, even if I was dumbass enough to sit with my back to the door, I'd have just called a cab and run you down and pulled you over and beat the shit out of you and left you laying there.
She got real quiet. He put the key in the ignition and started the truck and backed it out.
Would you have done that?
What do you think?
When they pulled into Van Horn, it was 7 o'clock at night. She'd slept a good part of the way, curled up with her knapsack for a pillow. He pulled into a truck stop and shut off the engine, and her eyes snapped open like a deer's. She sat up and looked at him, and then looked out at the parking lot.
Where are we?
She said.
Van Horn. You hungry?
I could eat a bite.
You want some diesel fried chicken?
What?
He pointed to the sign overhead.
I ain't eaten nothing like that, she said.
She was in the ladies' room a long time. When she came out, she wanted to know if he'd ordered.
I did. I ordered some of that chicken for you.
You ain't done it, she said.
They ordered steaks.
Do you live like this all the time? She said.
Sure. When you're a big-time desperado, the sky's the limit.
What's that on that chain?
This?
Yeah.
It's a tush off a wild boar.
What do you wear that for?
It ain't mine. I'm just keeping it for somebody.
A lady somebody?
No, a dead somebody.
The steaks came. He watched her eat.
Does they anybody know where you're at? He said.
What?
I said, does anybody know where you're at?
Like who?
Like anybody.
You?
I don't know where you're at because I don't know who you are.
Well, that makes two of us.
You don't know who you are?
No, silly. I don't know who you are.
Well, we'll just keep it that way, and they won't neither of us be out nothing, all right?
All right. What'd you ask me that for?
Moss mopped up steak gravy with a half a roll.
I just thought it was probably true. For you, it's a luxury. For me, it's a necessity.
Why, because they somebody after you?
Maybe.
I do like it that way, she said. You got that part right.
It don't take long to get a taste for it, does it?
No,
she said.
It don't.
Well, it ain't as simple as it sounds, you'll see.
Why's that?
There's always somebody knows where you're at, knows where and why, for the most part.
Are you talking about God?
No, I'm talking about you. She ate.
Well, she said, you'd be in a fix if you didn't know where you was at.
I don't know. Would you?
No, I don't know.
Suppose you was someplace that you didn't know where it was. The real thing you wouldn't know was where someplace else was, or how far it was. It wouldn't change nothing about where you was at. She thought about that.
I try not to think about stuff like that, she said.
You think when you get to California, you'll kind of start over.
Them's my intentions.
I think maybe that's the point. There's a road going to California, and there's one coming back. But the best way would be just to show up there.
Show up there?
Yeah.
You mean, and not know how you got there?
Yeah, and not know how you got there.
I don't know how you do that.
I don't either. That's the point.
She ate. She looked around.
Can I get some coffee?
She said.
You can get anything you want. You got money.
She looked at him.
I guess I ain't sure what the point is,
she said.
The point is there ain't no point.
No, I mean what you said about knowing where you are.
He looked at her. After a while, he said,
it's not about knowing where you are. It's about thinking you got there without taking anything with you. Your notions about starting over, or anybody's, you don't start over. That's what it's about. Every step you take is forever. You can't make it go away. None of it. You understand what I'm saying?
I think so.
I know you don't, but let me try it one more time. You think when you wake up in the morning, yesterday don't count, but yesterday is all that does count. What else is there? Your life is made out of the days it's made out of, nothing else. You might think you could run away and change your name and I don't know what all, start over. And then one morning you wake up and look at the ceiling, and guess who's laying there? She nodded. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand that. I've been there.
Yeah, I know you have.
So, are you sorry you become an outlaw?
Sorry I didn't start sooner. Are you ready?
When he came out of the motel office, he handed her a key.
What's that?
That's your key. She hefted it in her hand and looked at him.
Well, she said, it's up to you.
Yes, it is.
I guess you're afraid I'll see what's in that bag.
Not really. He started the truck and pulled down the parking lot behind the motel office.
Are you queer? She said.
Me? Yeah, I'm queer as a coot.
You don't look it.
Is that right? You know a lot of queers?
You don't act it, I guess I should say.
Well, darling, what would you know about it?
I don't know.
Say it again.
What?
Say it again. I don't know.
I don't know.
That's good. You need to practice that. It sounds good on you.
Later, he went out and drove down to the quick stop. When he pulled back into the motel, he sat there studying the cars in the lot. Then he got out. He walked down to her room and tapped at the door. He waited. He tapped again. He saw the curtain move, and then she opened the door. She stood there in the same jeans and T-shirt. She looked like she'd just woken up.
I know you ain't old enough to drink, but I thought I'd see if you wanted a beer.
Yeah, she said. I'd drink a beer.
He lifted one of the cold bottles out of the brown paper bag and handed it to you.
Here you go, he said.
He'd already turned to go. She stepped out and let the door shut behind her.
You don't need to rush off that way, she said.
He stopped on the lower step.
You got another one of these in that sack?
Yeah, I got two more, and I aim to drink both of them.
I just meant maybe you could sit here and drink one of them with me.
He squinted at her.
You ever notice how women have trouble taking no for an answer? I think it starts about age 3.
What about men?
They get used to it. They better.
I won't say a word. I'll just sit here.
You won't say a word?
No.
Well, that's already a lie.
Well, I won't say hardly nothing. I'll be real quiet.
He sat on the step and pulled one of the beers from the bag and twisted off the cap and tilted the bottle and drank. She sat on the next step up and did the same.
You sleep a lot? He said.
I sleep when I get the chance, yeah. You?
I ain't had a night's sleep in about 2 weeks. I don't know what it would feel like. I think it's beginning to make me stupid.
You don't look stupid to me.
Well, that's by your lights.
What's that mean?
Nothing. I'm just ragging you. I'll quit.
You ain't got drugs in that satchel, have you?
No, why? You use drugs?
I'd smoke some weed if you had some.
Well, I ain't.
That's all right.
Moss shook his head. He drank.
I just meant it's all right. We could just sit out here and drink a beer.
Well, I'm glad to hear that's all right.
Where are you heading? You ain't never said.
Hard to say.
You ain't going to California, though, are you?
No, I ain't.
I didn't think so.
I'm going to El Paso.
I thought you didn't know where you was going.
Maybe I just decided.
I don't think so.
Moss didn't answer.
This is nice, setting out here, she said.
I guess it depends on where you've been setting.
You ain't just got out of the penitentiary or something, have you?
I just got off of death row. They done shaved my head for the electric chair. You can see where it started to grow back.
You're full of it.
Be funny if it turned out to be true, though, wouldn't it?
Is the law hunting you?
Everybody's hunting me.
What did you do?
I've been picking up young girls hitchhiking and burying them out in the desert.
That ain't funny.
Yeah, you're right. It ain't. I was just pulling your leg.
You said you'd quit.
I will.
Do you ever tell the truth?
Yeah, I tell the truth.
You're married, ain't you?
Yeah.
What's your wife's name?
Carla Jean.
Is she in El Paso?
Yeah.
Does she know what you do for a living?
Yeah, she knows. I'm a welder.
She watched him to see what else he'd say. He didn't say anything. You ain't no welder, she said.
Why ain't I?
What have you got that machine gun for?
'Cause they's some bad people after me.
What did you do to 'em?
I took something that belongs to 'em, and they want it back.
That don't sound like welding to me.
It don't, does it? I guess I hadn't thought of that.
He sipped the beer, holding it by the neck between his thumb and forefinger.
And that's what's in the bag, ain't it?
Hard to say.
Are you a safecracker?
A safecracker?
Yeah.
Whatever give you that notion?
I don't know. Are you?
No.
Well, you're something, ain't you?
Everybody's something.
You ever been to California?
Yeah, I've been to California. I got a brother lives there.
Does he like it?
I don't know. He lives there.
You wouldn't live there, though, would you?
No.
You think that's where I ought to go?
He looked at her and looked away again. He stretched his legs out on the concrete and crossed his boots and looked out across the parking lot toward the highway and the lights on the highway.
Darling, he said, how in the hell would I know where you ought to go?
Yeah, well, I appreciate you giving me that money.
You're welcome.
You didn't have to do that.
I thought you wasn't going to talk.
All right, that's a lot of money, though.
It ain't half what you think it is, you'll see.
I won't blow it in. I need money to get me a place to stay.
You'll be all right.
I hope so.
Best way to live in California is to be from somewheres else. Probably the best way is to be from Mars.
I hope not, 'cause I ain't.
You'll be all right.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah, go ahead.
How old are you?
36.
That's pretty old. I didn't know you was that old.
I know, it kind of took me by surprise my own self.
I got a feeling I ought to be afraid of you, but I ain't.
Well, I can't advise you on that, neither. Most people will run from their own mother to get to hug death by the neck. They can't wait to see him.
I guess that's what you think I'm doing.
I don't even want to know what you're doing.
I wonder where I'd be right now if I hadn't have met you this morning.
I don't know.
I was always lucky about stuff like that, about meeting people.
Well, I wouldn't speak too soon.
Why, you fixing to bury me out in the desert?
No. But there's a lot of bad luck out there. You hang around long enough and you'll come in for your share of it.
I think I done have. I believe I'm due for a change. I might even be overdue.
Yeah, well, you ain't.
Why do you say that?
He looked at her.
Let me tell you something, little sister. If there is one thing on this planet that you don't look like, it's a bunch of good luck walking around.
That's a hateful thing to say.
No, it ain't. I just want you to be careful. We get to El Paso, I'm going to drop you at the bus station. You got money. You don't need to be out here hitchhiking.
All right.
All right.
Would you have done what you said back yonder? About if I'd have took your truck?
What's that?
You know, about beating the crap out of me.
No.
I didn't think so.
You want to split this last beer?
All right.
Run in there and get a cup. I'll be back in a minute.
All right. You ain't changed your mind, have you?
About what?
You know about what?
I don't change my mind. I like to get it right the first time.
He rose and started up the walkway. She stood at the door.
I'll tell you something I heard in a movie one time,
she said.
He stopped and turned. What's that?
There's a lot of good salesmen around, and you might buy something yet.
Well, darling, you're just a little late, 'cause I done bought, and I think I'll stick with what I got.
He went on up the walkway and climbed the stairs and went in. The Barracuda pulled into a truck stop outside of Balmoray and drove into the bay of the adjoining car wash. The driver got out and shut the door and looked at it. There was blood and other matter streaked over the glass and over the sheet metal, and he walked out and got quarters from a change machine and came back and put them in the slot and took down the wand from the rack and washed the car and rinsed it off and got back in and pulled out onto the highway going west.
Bell left the house at 7:30 and took 285 north to Fort Stockton. It was about a 200-mile run to Van Horn, and he reckoned he could make it in under 3 hours. He turned the roof lights on. About 10 miles west of Fort Stockton, on the I-10 interstate, he passed a car burning by the side of the highway. There were police cars at the scene, and one lane of the highway was blocked off. He didn't stop, but it gave him an uneasy feeling. He stopped at Balmoray and refilled his coffee bottle, and he pulled into Van Horn at 10:25. He didn't know what he was looking for, but he didn't have to. In the parking lot of a motel, there were two Culberson County patrol cars and a state police car, all with their lights going. The motel was cordoned off with yellow tape. He pulled in and parked and left his own lights on. The deputy didn't know him, but the sheriff did. They were questioning a man sitting in his shirt sleeves in the open back door of one of the cruisers.
"Damn, if bad news don't travel fast," the sheriff said. "What are you doing up here, sheriff?"
"What's happened, Marvin?"
"Had a little shootout. You know anything about this?"
"I don't know. You got any victims?"
"They left out of here about a half hour ago in the ambulance. Two men and a woman. The woman was dead, and the one boy I don't think is going to make it either. The other one might."
"Do you know who they were?"
"No. One of the men was Mexican, and we're waiting for a registration on his car sitting over yonder. Wasn't a one of them had any identification on him or in the room, either one."
"What does this man say?"
"He says a Mexican started it. Says he drug the woman out of her room and the other man come out with a gun, but when he seen the Mexican had a gun pointed at the woman's head, he laid his own piece down. And whenever he done that, the Mexican shoved the woman away and shot her and then turned and shot him. He was standing in front of 117 right yonder. Shot him with a goddamn machine gun. According to this witness, the old boy fell down the steps and then he picked up his gun again and shot the Mexican. Which I don't see how he done it. He was shot all to pieces. You can see the blood on the walkway yonder. We had a real good response time, about 7 minutes, I think. The girl was just shot dead."
"No ID?"
"No ID. The other old boy's truck has got dealer tags on it."
Bell nodded. He looked at the witness. The witness had asked for a cigarette, and he lit it and sat smoking. He looked pretty comfortable. He looked as if he'd sat in the back of police cruisers before.
"That woman," Bell said, "was she Anglo?"
"Yeah, she was Anglo. Had blonde hair, sort of reddish, maybe."
"Did you all find any dope?"
"Not yet. We're still looking."
"Any money?"
"We ain't found nothing yet. The girl was checked into 121, had a knapsack with some clothes in it and stuff was all."
Bell looked down the row of motel doors, people standing around in small groups talking. He looked at the black Barracuda.
"Has that thing got anything to turn them tires with?"
"I'd say it would turn them pretty good. It's got a 440 under the hood with a blower on it."
"A blower?"
"Yep."
"I don't see one."
"It's one of them sidewinders. It's all under the hood."
Bell stood looking at the car. Then he turned and looked at the sheriff.
"Can you get away from here for a minute?"
"I can. What did you have in mind?"
"I just thought I might get you to ride over to the clinic with me."
"All right. Just ride with me."
"That'll be fine. Let me just park my cruiser a little better,
Hell, it's all right, Ed Tom. Just let me pull it up here out of the way. You don't always know how quick you'll be back when you set off someplace.
At the desk, the sheriff spoke to the night nurse by name. She looked at Bell.
He's up here to make a identification, the sheriff said.
She nodded and rose and put her pencil in the pages of the book she was reading.
Two of them were DOA, she said. They flew that Mexican out of here in a helicopter about 20 minutes ago, or maybe you already knew that.
Nobody tells me nothing, darling, the sheriff said.
They followed her down the hallway. There was a thin trail of blood along the concrete floor.
They wouldn't have been hard to find, would they? Bell said.
There was a red sign at the end of the hall that read exit. Before they got there, she turned and fitted a key to a steel door on the left and opened it and switched on the light. The room was raw concrete block, windowless and empty, save for three steel machinist tables on wheels. On two of them lay bodies covered with plastic sheets. She stood with her back to the open door while they filed past.
He ain't a friend of yours, is he, Ed Tom?
No.
He took a couple of rounds in the face, so I don't think he's going to look too good. Not that I ain't seen worse. That highway out there's a goddamn war zone. You tell the truth about it.
He pulled back the sheet. Bell walked around the end of the table. There was no chalk under Moss's neck, and his head was turned to the side. One eye partly opened. He looked like a bad man on a slab. They'd sponged the blood off of him, but there were holes in his face, and his teeth were shot out.
Is that him?
Yeah, that's him.
You look like you wished it wasn't.
I get to tell his wife.
I'm sorry about that.
Bell nodded.
Well, the sheriff said, there ain't nothing you could have done about it.
No, Bell said, but you always like to think there is.
The sheriff covered Moss's face and reached and lifted back the plastic at the other table and looked at Bell. Bell shook his head.
They'd rented two rooms, or he did, paid cash. You couldn't read the name on the register, just a scrawl.
His name was Moss.
All right. We'll get your information down at the office. Kind of a skanky-looking little old girl.
Yeah.
He covered her face again.
I don't reckon his wife is going to like that part of it neither, he said.
No, I don't expect she will.
The sheriff looked at the nurse. She was still standing, leaning against the door.
How many times was she hit? He said. Do you know?
No, I don't, Sheriff. You can look at her if you want. I don't mind, and I know she won't.
That's all right. It'll be on the autopsy. Are you ready, Ed Tom?
Yeah, I was ready before I come in here.
He sat in the sheriff's office alone with the door shut and stared at the phone on the desk. Finally, he got up and went out. The deputy looked up.
He's gone home, I reckon.
Yes, sir, the deputy said. Can I help you with something, Sheriff?
How far is it to El Paso?
It's about 120 miles.
You tell him I said thank you, and I'll give him a call tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
He stopped and ate on the far side of town and sat in the booth and sipped his coffee and watched the lights out on the highway.
Something wrong.
He couldn't make sense out of it. He looked at his watch, 1:20. He paid and walked out and got in the cruiser and sat there. Then he drove to the intersection and turned east and drove back to the motel again. Shiger checked into a motel on the eastbound interstate and walked out across a windy field in the dark and watched across the highway through a pair of binoculars. The big overland trucks loomed up in the glasses and drew away. He squatted on his heels with his elbows on his knees, watching. Then he went back to the motel. He set his alarm for 1 o'clock, and when it went off, he got up and showered and dressed and walked out to his truck with his small leather bag and put it behind the seat. He parked in the motel parking lot, and he sat there for some time. leaning back in the seat and watching in the rearview mirror. Nothing. The police cars were long gone. The yellow police tape across the door lifted in the wind, and the trucks droned past, headed for Arizona and California. He got out and walked up to the door and blew out the lock with his stun gun and walked in and shut the door behind him. He could see the room pretty well by the light through the windows, small spills of light from the bullet holes in the plywood door. He pulled the little bedside table over to the wall and stood and took a screwdriver from his rear pocket and began to back the screws out of the louvered steel cover of the air duct. He set it on the table and reached in and pulled out the bag and stepped down and walked over to the window and looked out at the parking lot. He took the pistol from behind his belt and opened the door and stepped out and closed it behind him and stooped under the tape and walked down to his truck and got in. He set the bag in the floor, and he'd reached for the key to turn on the ignition when he saw the Terrell County cruiser pull into the lot in front of the motel office 100 feet away. He let go of the key and sat back. The cruiser pulled into a parking space, and the lights went out. Then the motor. Chigurh waited, the pistol in his lap. When Bell got out, he took a look around the lot, and then he walked up to the door at 117 and tried the knob. The door was unlocked. He ducked under the tape and pushed the door open and reached and found the wall switch and turned on the light. The first thing he saw was the grill and the screws lying on the table. He shut the door behind him and stood there. He stepped to the window and looked past the edge of the curtain out at the parking lot. He stood there for some time. Nothing moved. He saw something lying in the floor and stepped over and picked it up, but he already knew what it was. He turned it in his hand. He walked over and sat on the bed and weighed the little piece of brass in his palm. Then he tilted it into the ashtray on the bedside table. He picked up the telephone, but the line was dead. He put the receiver back in the cradle. He took his pistol from the holster and flipped open the gate and checked the shells in the cylinder and closed the gate with his thumb and sat with the pistol resting on his knee. "You don't know for sure that he's out there," he said. "Yes, you do. You knew it at the restaurant. That's why you come back here." "Well, what do you aim to do?" He got up and walked over and switched off the light. 5 bullet holes in the door. He stood with the revolver in his hand, his thumb on the knurled hammer. Then he opened the door and walked out. He walked to the cruiser, studying the cars in the lot, pickup trucks for the most part. You could always see the muzzle flash first, just not first enough. "Can you feel it when someone is watching you? A lot of people thought so." He reached the cruiser and opened the door with his left hand. The dome light came on. He stepped in and pulled the door shut and laid the pistol on the seat beside him and got out his key and put it in the ignition and started the car. Then he backed out of the parking space and switched on the lights and swung out of the lot. When he was out of sight of the motel, he pulled over onto the shoulder and took the speaker from the hook and called the sheriff's office. They sent 2 cars. He hung the mic up and put the cruiser in neutral and rolled back down the edge of the highway until he could just see the motel sign. He looked at his watch. 1:45. That 7-minute time would make it 1:52. He waited. At the motel, nothing moved. At 1:52, he saw them come down the highway and tail each other up the off-ramp with sirens on and lights blazing. He kept his eyes on the motel. Any vehicle that came out of the lot and headed up the access road, he'd already determined to run it off the road. When the cruisers pulled into the motel, he started the car and turned on the lights and did a U-turn and went back down the road the wrong way and pulled into the lot and got out. They went down the parking lot vehicle by vehicle with flashlights and their guns drawn and came back again. Bell was the first one back and he stood leaning against his cruiser. He nodded to the deputies.
"Gentlemen," he said, "I think we've been outgeneraled."
They holstered their pistols. He and the chief deputy walked over to the room, and Bell showed him the lock and the air vent and the lock cylinder.
"What's he done that with, Sheriff?" the deputy said, holding the cylinder in his hand.
"It's a long story," Bell said. "I'm sorry to have got you all out here for nothing."
"Not a problem, Sheriff.
You tell the sheriff I'll call him from El Paso."
"Yes, sir, I'll sure do it."
2 hours later, he checked into the Roadway Inn on the east side of town and got the key and went to his room and went to bed. He woke at 6, as he always did, and got up and closed the curtains and went back to bed, but he couldn't sleep. Finally, he got up and showered and dressed and went down to the coffee shop and got his breakfast and read the paper. There'd be nothing about Moss and the girl yet. When the waitress came with more coffee, he asked her what time they got the evening paper.
"I don't know," she said. "I quit reading it."
"I don't blame you. I would if I could."
"I quit reading it, and I made my husband quit reading it."
"Is that right?"
"I don't know why they call it a newspaper. I don't call that stuff news."
"No."
"When was the last time you read something about Jesus Christ in the newspaper?"
Bell shook his head.
"I don't know," he said. "I guess I'd have to say it would be a while."
"I guess it would, too," she said. "A long while."
He'd knocked on other doors with the same sort of message. It wasn't all that new to him. He saw the window curtain move slightly, and then the door opened, and she stood there in jeans with her shirt tail out looking at him. No expression, just waiting. He took off his hat, and she leaned against the door jamb and turned her face away.
"I'm sorry, ma'am," he said.
"Oh, God," she said.
She staggered back into the room and slumped to the floor and buried her face in her forearms with her hands over her head. Bell stood there holding his hat. He didn't know what to do. He couldn't see any sign of the mother. Two Spanish maids were standing in the parking lot, watching and whispering to each other. He stepped into the room and closed the door.
"Carla Jean," he said.
"Oh, God,"
she said.
"I'm just as sorry as I can be."
"Oh, God."
He stood there, his hat in his hand.
"I'm sorry," he said.
She raised her head and looked at him, her crumpled face.
"Damn you," she said. "You stand there and tell me you're sorry? My husband is dead. Do you understand that? You say you're sorry one more time, and by God, if I won't get my gun and shoot you."
Part 9.
I had to take her at her word. Not a lot else you could do. I never saw her again. I wanted to tell her that the way they had it in the papers wasn't right, about him and that girl. It turned out she was a runaway, 15 years old. I don't believe that he had anything to do with her, and I hated that she thought that, which you know she did. I called her a number of times, but she'd hang up on me, and I can't blame her. Then when they called me from Odessa and told me what had happened, I couldn't hardly believe it. It didn't make no sense. I drove up there, but there wasn't nothing to be done. Her grandmother had just died, too. I tried to see if I could get his fingerprints off the FBI database, but they just drew a blank. Wanted to know what his name was and what he'd done and all such as that. You end up looking like a fool. He's a ghost. But he's out there. You wouldn't think it would be possible to just come and go that away. I keep waiting to hear something else. Maybe I will yet, or maybe not. It's easy to fool yourself, tell yourself what you want to hear. You wake up in the night and you think about things. I ain't sure anymore what it is I do want to hear. You tell yourself that maybe this business is over, but you know it ain't. You can wish all you want. My daddy always told me to just do the best you knew how and tell the truth. He said there was nothing to set a man's mind at ease like waking up in the morning and not having to decide who you were.
And if you done something wrong, just stand up and say you done it and say you're sorry and get on with it. Don't haul stuff around with you. I guess all that sounds pretty simple today, even to me. All the more reason to think about it. He didn't say a lot, so I tend to remember what he did say, and I don't remember that he had a lot of patience with having to say things twice, so I learned to listen the first time. I might have strayed from all of that some as a younger man, but when I got back on that road, I pretty much decided not to quit again, and I didn't. I think the truth is always simple. It has pretty much got to be. It needs to be simple enough for a child to understand. Otherwise, it'd be too late. By the time you figured it out, it would be too late.
Chigurh stood at the receptionist's desk, dressed in suit and tie. He set the case in the floor at his feet and looked around the office.
"How do you spell that?" she said. He told her. "Is he expecting you?"
"No, he's not. But he's going to be glad to see me."
"Just a minute."
She buzzed the inner office. There was a silence. Then she hung up the phone.
"Go right in," she said.
He opened the door and walked in, and a man at the desk stood up and looked at him. He came around the desk and held out his hand.
"I know that name," he said.
They sat on a sofa in the corner of the office, and Chigurh set the case on the coffee table and nodded at it.
"That's yours," he said.
"What is it?"
"It's some money that belongs to you."
The man sat looking at the case. Then he got up and went over to the desk and leaned and pushed a button.
"Hold my calls," he said.
He turned and put his hands on either side of the desk behind him and leaned back and studied Chigurh.
"How did you find me?" he said.
"What difference does it make?"
"It makes a difference to me."
"You don't have to worry. Nobody else is coming."
"How do you know?"
"Because I'm in charge of who is coming and who is not. I think we need to address the issue here. I don't want to spend a lot of time trying to put your mind at ease. I think it would be both hopeless and thankless. So let's talk about money."
"All right."
"Some of it is missing, about $100,000. Part of that was stolen and part of it went to cover my expenses. I've been at some pains to recover your property, so I'd prefer not to be addressed as some sort of bearer of bad news here. There is $2.3 million in that case. I'm sorry I couldn't recover it all. But there you are."
The man hadn't moved. After a while, he said,
"Who the hell are you?"
"My name is Anton Chigurh."
"I know that."
"Then why did you ask?"
"What do you want? I guess that's my question."
"Well, I'd say that the purpose of my visit is simply to establish my bona fides as someone who is an expert in a difficult field, as someone who is completely reliable and completely honest, something like that."
"Someone I might do business with?"
"Yes."
"You're serious?"
"Completely."
Chigurh watched him. He watched the dilation in his eyes and the pulse in the artery of his neck, the rate of his breathing. When he'd first put his hands on the desk behind him, he'd looked somewhat relaxed. He was still standing in the identical attitude, but he didn't look that way anymore.
"There's not a bomb in that damn bag, is there?"
"No. No bombs."
Chigurh undid the straps and unlatched the brass hasp and opened the leather flap and tipped the case forward.
"Yes," the man said. "Put that away."
Chigurh closed the bag. The man stood up from his leaning against the desk. He wiped his mouth with his foreknuckle.
"I think what you need to consider," Chigurh said, "is how you lost this money in the first place, who you listened to, and what happened when you did."
"Yes. We can't talk here."
"I understand. In any case, I don't expect you to absorb all this at one sitting. I'll call you in 2 days' time."
"All right."
Chigurh rose from the couch. The man nodded toward the case.
"You could do a lot of business on your own with that," he said.
Chigurh smiled.
"We have a lot to talk about," he said.
We'll be dealing with new people now. There won't be any more problems.
What happened to the old people?
They've moved on to other things. Not everyone is suited to this line of work. The prospect of outsized profits